Chapter 25. An Answer. The Shatayan, indeed, was waiting, a tall, handsome woman, wrapped in dignity and frosty at being made to wait. Her hazel eyes could have chilled wine. Any queen who got on the wrong side of a Shatayan was a fool, so Moiraine made herself pleasant as the woman escorted her through the halls. She thought she made some progress in melting that frost, but it was difficult to concentrate. A young footman? She did not know whether Swan had ever been with a man, but surely she would not, just to reach Ines's servants. Not a footman. Statues and tapestries lined the hallways, most surprising for what she knew of the borderlands. Marble carvings of women with flowers or children playing, silk weavings of fields of flowers and nobles in gardens, and only a few hunting scenes, without a single battle shown anywhere. At intervals along the halls, arched windows looked down into many more gardens than she expected to, and flagged courtyards, some with a splashing marble fountain. In one of those, she saw something that pushed questions about Swan and a footman to the back of her mind. It was a simple courtyard without fountain or columned walk, and men stood in rows along the walls watching two others, stripped to the waist and fighting with wooden practice swords, Rhine and Bukama. It was fighting, if in practice. Blows landed on flesh hard enough for her to hear the thuds. All landed by Rhine. She would have to avoid them, and Lan, if he was there, too. He had not bothered to hide his doubts, and he might raise questions she did not dare have asked. Was she Moiraine or Alice? Worse, was she Aes Sedai or a Wilder pretending? Questions that would be discussed in the streets by the next night for any sister to hear, and that last was one any sister would investigate. Fortunately, three wandering soldiers would hardly be present anywhere she was. Prince Briss, a solid, green-eyed man, greeted her intimately in a large room paneled red and gold. Two of the prince's married sisters were present with their husbands, and one of Atheniella's with hers, the men in muted silks, the women in bright colors belted high beneath their breasts and embroidered down the arms and along the hems of their skirts. Liveried servants offered sweetmeats and nuts. Moiraine thought she might get a sore neck from looking up. The shortest of the women was taller than Swan, and they all stood very straight. Their necks would have bent a little for a sister, men's and women's alike, but they knew themselves the equals of the Lady Moiraine. The talk ranged from music and the best musicians among the nobles at court to the rigors of travel, from whether to credit rumors of a man who could channel to why so many Aes Sedai seemed to be about, and Moiraine found it difficult to maintain the expected light wittiness. She cared little for music and less for whoever played the instruments. In Cairhien, musicians were hired and forgotten. Everyone knew that travel was arduous, with no assurance of beds or decent food at the end of the day's 20 or 30 miles, and that was when the weather was good. Obviously, some of the sisters were about because of rumors about the man, and others to tighten ties that might have loosened during the Aiel War, to make sure thrones and houses understood they were still expected to meet their obligations to the tower, both public and private. If an Aes Sedai had not come to the Aes Daishar yet, one soon would. Reason enough for her to make heavy going of idle chat. That, and thinking about other reasons for sisters to be wandering. The men put a good face on it, but she thought the women found her particularly dull. When Briss's children were brought in, Moiraine felt a great relief. Having his children introduced to her was a sign of acceptance to his household, but more, it signaled the end of the audience. The eldest son, Antal, was in the south, with Atheniella as heir, leaving a lovely green-eyed girl of 12 named Jarine to lead in her sister and four brothers, formally aligned by age, though in truth the two youngest boys were still in skirts and carried by nursemaids. Stifling her impatience to find out what Swan had learned, Moiraine complimented the children on their behavior, encouraged them at their lessons. They must think her as dull as their elders did. Something a little less flat. "And how did you earn your bruises, my Lord Dirick?" she asked, hardly listening to the boy's soberly delivered story of a fall. Until, "My father says it was Lan's luck I wasn't killed, my lady," Dirick said, brightening out of his formality. "Lan is the king of Malkir and the luckiest man in the world and the best swordsman, except for my father, of course." "The king of Malkir?" Warain said, blinking. Derek nodded vigorously and began explaining in a rush of words about Lan's exploits in the Blight and the Malkieri who had come to the Aes Dyshar to follow him, until his father motioned him to silence.
"Lan is a king if he wishes it, my lady," Briss said.
A very odd thing to say, and his doubtful tone made it odder.
"He keeps much to his rooms."
Briss sounded troubled about that, too.
"But you will meet him before you—" "My lady, are you well?"
"Not very," she told him. She had hoped for another meeting with Lan Mandragoran, planned for it, but not here. Her stomach was trying to twist into knots. "I myself may keep to my rooms for a few days, if you will forgive me." He would, of course, and everyone was full of regret at missing her company and sympathy for the strain traveling must have put on her, though she did hear one of the women murmur that Southlanders must be very delicate. A pale-haired young woman in green and red was waiting to show Moiraine back to her rooms. Ellis bobbed a curtsy every time she spoke, which meant she bobbed quite often in the beginning. She had been told of Moiraine's faintness, and she asked every 20 paces whether Moiraine wished to sit and catch her breath, or have cool damp cloths brought to her rooms, or hot bricks for her feet, or smelling salts, or a dozen more sure cures for a light head, until Moiraine curtly told her to be quiet. The fool girl led on in silence, face blank. Moiraine cared not a whit whether the woman was offended. All she wanted right then was to find Swan with good news. With the boy in her arms, born on Dragonmount, and his mother packed to travel would be best of all. Most of all, though, she wanted herself out of the halls before she ran into Lan Mandragoran. Worrying about him, she rounded a corner behind the serving girl and came face to face with Marian, blue-fringed shawl looped over her arms. The Shatayan herself was guiding Marian, and behind the motherly-looking sister came a train of servants, one woman carrying her red riding gloves, another her fur-trimmed cloak, a third her dark velvet hat. Pairs of men bore wicker pack hampers that could have been carried by one, and others had arms full of flowers. An Aes Sedai received more honor than a mere lady, however high her house. Marian's eyes narrowed at the sight of Moiraine. "A surprise to see you here," she said slowly. "By your dress, I take it you've given over your disguise? But no, still no ring, I see." Moiraine was so startled at the woman's sudden appearance that she hardly heard what Marian said. "Are you alone?" she blurted. For a moment, Marian's eyes became slits. "Larella decided to go her own way. South, I believe. More, I don't know." "It was Kedswain I was thinking of," Moiraine said, blinking in surprise. The more she had thought about Kedswain, the more she had become convinced the woman must be Black Aja. What surprised her was Larella. Larella had seemed bent on reaching Chutchin and without delay. Of course, plans could change. But suddenly Moiraine realized something that should have been obvious. Black sisters could lie. It was impossible. The oaths could not be broken, yet it had to be. Marian moved close to Moiraine, and when Moiraine took a step back, she followed. Moiraine held herself erect, but she still came no higher than the other woman's chin. "Are you so eager to see Kedswain?" Marian said, looking down at her. Her voice was pleasant, her smooth face comforting, but her eyes were cold iron. "The last I saw her, she said that next time she met you, she'd spank your bottom till you couldn't sit for a week. She'll do it, too." Abruptly glancing at the servants, she seemed to realize they were not alone. The iron faded, but it did not disappear. "Kedswain was right, you know. A young woman who thinks she knows more than she does can land herself in very deep trouble. I suggest you be very still and very quiet until we can talk." Her gesture for the Shatayan to lead on was peremptory, and the dignified woman leaped to obey.
A king or queen might find themselves in a Shatayan's bad graces, but never an Aes Sedai. Moiraine stared after Marian until she vanished around a corner far down the corridor. Everything Marian had just said could have come from one of Tamra's chosen. Black sisters could lie. Had Lorella changed her mind about Jachin? Or was she dead somewhere, like Tamra and the others? Suddenly she realized she was smoothing her skirts. Stilling her hands was easy, but she could not stop herself trembling faintly. Ellis was staring at her with her mouth open.
"Your Aes Sedai, too," the woman squeaked, then gave a jump, taking Moiraine's wince for a grimace. "You must be in disguise," she said breathlessly. "I won't say a word to anyone, Aes Sedai. I swear by the light and my father's grave."
As if every person behind Marian had not heard everything she had. They would not hold their tongues. "Take me to Lan Mandragoran's apartments," Moiraine told her. What was true at sunrise could change by noon, and so could what was necessary. She took the great serpent ring from her pouch and put it on her right hand. Sometimes you had to gamble. After a long walk, mercifully in silence, Ellis rapped at a red door and announced to the gray-haired woman who opened it that the Lady Moiraine Damodred Aes Sedai wished to speak with King Al-Lan Mandragoran. The woman had added her own touches to what Moiraine told her. King, indeed. Shockingly, the reply came back that Lord Mandragoran had no wish to speak with any Aes Sedai. The gray-haired woman looked scandalized, but closed the door firmly. Ellis stared at Moiraine, wide-eyed.
"I can show my Lady Aes Sedai to her own rooms now," she said uncertainly. "If—"
She squeaked when Moiraine pushed open the door and went in. The gray-haired serving woman and a younger leaped up from where they had been sitting, apparently darning shirts. A bony young man scrambled awkwardly to his feet beside the fireplace, looking to the women for instruction. They simply stared at Moiraine until she raised a questioning eyebrow. Then the gray-haired woman pointed to one of the two doors leading deeper into the apartments. The door she pointed to led to a sitting room much like Moiraine's own, but all of the gilded chairs had been moved back against the walls and the flowered carpets rolled up. Shirtless, Lan was practicing the sword in the cleared area. A small golden locket swung at his neck as he moved, his blade a blur. Sweat covered him, and the wounds she had healed him of had been replaced by claw marks from some wild animal on his back? Or marks left by a woman? Could this cold man actually inspire such passion in a woman that she would— She felt her cheeks heating at the image that popped into her head. Let him have as many women as he wished, so long as he did what she wished. He spun gracefully out of the forms to face her, the point of his sword grounding on the floor tiles. He still did not quite meet her gaze in that strange way he and Bukama had. His hair hung damply, clinging to his face despite the leather cord, but he was not breathing hard.
"You," he growled. "So you are Aes Sedai and a Damodred today. I've no time for your games, Kyrianen. I'm waiting for someone."
Cold blue eyes flickered to the door behind her. Oddly, what appeared to be a cord woven of hair was tied around the inner handle in an elaborate knot.
"She will not be pleased to find another woman here."
"Your lady love need have no fear of me," Moiraine told him dryly. "For one thing, you are much too tall, and for another, I prefer men with at least a modicum of charm and manners. I came for your help. There was a pledge made and held since the War of the Hundred Years that Malkyr would ride when the White Tower called. I am Aes Sedai, and I call you."
"You know the hills are high, but not how they lie," he muttered as if quoting some Malkyri saying.
Stalking across the room away from her, he snatched up his scabbard and sheathed the sword forcefully.
"I'll give you your help, if you can answer a question. I've asked Aes Sedai over the years, but they wriggled away from answering like vipers. If you are Aes Sedai, answer it."
"If I know the answer, I will." She would not tell him again that she was what she was, but she embraced Sidar,
and moved one of the gilded chairs out into the middle of the floor. She could not have lifted the thing with her hands, yet it floated easily on flows of air, and would have had it been twice as heavy. Sitting, she rested her hands on crossed knees where the golden serpent on her finger was plain. The taller person had an advantage when both stood, but someone standing must feel they were being judged by someone sitting, especially an Aes Sedai. He did not seem to feel anything of the kind. For the first time since she had met him, he met her eyes directly, and his stare was blue ice.
"When Malkier died," he said in tones of quiet steel, "Shinar and Arafel sent men. They could not stop the flood of Trollocs and Murdral, yet they came. Men rode from Kandor and even Saldea. They came too late, but they came."
Blue ice became blue fire. His voice did not change, but his knuckles grew white, gripping his sword.
"For 900 years we rode when the White Tower called. But where was the tower when Malkier died? If you or Aes Sedai, answer me that."
Moiraine hesitated. The answer he wanted was sealed to the tower, taught to accept it in history lessons, yet forbidden to any except initiates of the tower. But what was another penance alongside what she faced? "Over 100 sisters were ordered to Malkier," she said more calmly than she felt. By everything she had been taught, she should ask a penance for what she had told him already. "Even Aes Sedai cannot fly, however. They were too late." By the time the first had arrived, the armies of Malkier were already broken by endless hordes of shadow spawn, the people fleeing or dead. The death of Malkier had been hard and blood-soaked and fast. "That was before I was born, but I regret it deeply, and I regret that the tower decided to keep their efforts secret." Better that the tower be thought to have done nothing than to have it known Aes Sedai had tried and failed. Failure was a blow to stature, and mystery and armor the tower needed. Aes Sedai had reasons of their own for what they did and for what they did not do, and those reasons were known only to Aes Sedai. "That is as much answer as I can give. More than I should have. More than any other sister ever will, I think. Will it suffice?" For a time he simply looked at her, fire slowly fading to ice once more. His eyes fell away.
"Almost I can believe," he muttered finally, without saying what he almost believed. He gave a bitter laugh. "What help can I give you?"
Moiraine frowned. She very much wanted time alone with this man, to bring him to heel, but that had to wait. She very much hoped he was not a dark friend. "There is another sister in the palace, Marianne Redhill. I need to know where she goes, what she does, who she meets." He blinked, but did not ask the obvious questions. Perhaps he knew he would get no answers, but his silence was still pleasing.
"I've been keeping to my rooms the past few days," he said, looking at the door again. "I do not know how much watching I can do."
In spite of herself, she sniffed. The man promised help, then looked anxiously for his lady. Perhaps he was not what she had thought. But he was who she had. "Not you," she told him. Her visit here would be known throughout the Aes Daishar soon, if it was not already, and if he was noticed spying on Marianne, that could be disaster even if the woman was as innocent as a babe. "I thought you might ask one of the Malkieri I understand have gathered here to follow you. Someone with a sharp eye and a close tongue. This must be done in utter secrecy."
"No one follows me," he said sharply.
Glancing at the door once more, he suddenly seemed weary. He did not slump, but he moved to the fireplace and propped his sword beside it with the care of a tired man. Standing with his back to her, he said,
"I will ask Bukama and Rhine to watch her, but I cannot promise for them. That is all I can do for you."
She stifled a vexed sound. Whether it was all he could do or all he would, she had no leverage to force him. "Bukama," she said, "only him." Going by how he had behaved around her, Ryan would be too busy gaping at Marian to see or hear anything. That was if he did not confess what he was doing the moment Marian looked at him. And do not tell him why. His head whipped around, but after a moment he nodded. And again he did not ask the questions most people would have. Telling him how to get word to her by notes passed to her maid Suki, she prayed she was not making a grave mistake. Back in her own rooms, she discovered just how quickly news had spread. In the sitting room, Swan was offering a tray of sweetmeats to a tall, full-mouthed young woman in pale green silk, little older than a girl, with black hair that fell well below her hips, and a small blue dot painted on her forehead, about where the stone of Moiraine's caissière hung. Swan's face was smooth, but her voice was tight as she made introductions. The Lady Isella quickly showed why.
"Everyone in the palace is saying you are Aes Sedai," she said, eyeing Moiraine doubtfully. She did not rise, much less curtsy, or even incline her head. "If that is so, I need your assistance. I wish to go to the White Tower. My mother wants me to marry. I would not mind Lan as my carneira if mother were not already his, but when I marry, I think it will be one of my warders. I will be Green Aja."
She frowned faintly at Swan.
"Don't hover, girl. Stand over there until you are needed."
Swan took up a stance by the fireplace, back stiff and arms folded beneath her breasts. No real servant would have stood so, or frowned so, but Isella no longer noticed her.
"Do sit down, Moiraine," she went on with a smile, "and I will tell you what I need of you. If you are Aes Sedai, of course."
Moiraine stared, invited to take a chair in her own sitting room. This silly child was certainly a suitable match for Lan when it came to arrogance. Her carneira? That meant first in the old tongue and plainly something else here. Not what it seemed to, of course. Even these Malchieri could not be that peculiar. Sitting, she said dryly, "Choosing your Aja should at least wait until I test you to see whether there is any point in sending you to the tower. A few minutes will determine whether you can learn to channel, and your potential strength if you—" The girl blithely broke in.
"Oh, I was tested years ago. The Aes Sedai said I would be very strong. I told her I was 15, but she learned the truth. I don't see why I could not go to the tower at 12 if I wanted. Mother was furious. She has always said I was to be queen of Malkir one day, but that means marrying Lan, which I would not want even if mother weren't his carneira. When you tell her you are taking me to the tower, she will have to listen. Everyone knows that Aes Sedai take any woman they want for training, and no one can stop them."
That full mouth pursed.
"You are Aes Sedai, aren't you?"
Moiraine performed the rosebud exercise. "If you want to go to Tar Valon, then go. I certainly do not have time to escort you. You will find sisters there about whom you can have no doubts. Suki, will you show the Lady Isella out? No doubt she does not wish to delay in setting off before her mother catches her." The chit was all indignation, of course, but Moiraine wanted only to see the back of her, and Swan very nearly pushed her out into the corridor, protesting every step of the way. Moiraine felt Swan embrace the source, and the protests cut off with a sharp yelp. "That one," Swan said as she came back, dusting her hands, "won't last a month if she can equal Cadswain." "Ciaran herself can toss her from the top of the tower for all I care," Moiraine snapped. "Did you learn anything?"
"Well, I learned that young Cal knows how to kiss, and aside from that I came up with a bucket of bilge water."
Swan scowled suddenly.
"Why are you looking at me that way? I only kissed him, Moiraine. Have you kissed a pretty man since young Cormanis the night before you left for the tower? Well, it's been as long for me, too. And Cal is very pretty."
"That is all very well," Moiraine said briskly.
Light, how long since she had thought of Cormanis. He had been beautiful.
Surprisingly, learning that Moiraine had approached Lan upset Swan more than Marian's appearance.
"Skin me and salt me if you don't take idiot risks, Moiraine. A man who claims the throne of a dead country is 9 kinds of fool. He could be flapping his tongue about you right this minute to anybody who'll bloody listen. If Marian learns you're having her watched, burn me.
He is many kinds of fool, Suan, but I do not think he ever flaps his tongue. Besides, you cannot win if you will not risk a copper, as you always tell me your father used to say. We have no choice but to take risks. With Marian here, time may be running out. You must reach the Lady Inez as quickly as you can.
I'll do what I can, Swan muttered, and stalked out, squaring her shoulders as if for a struggle.
But she was smoothing her skirt over her hips, too.
Moiraine hoped matters were not going to proceed beyond kissing. Swan's business if it did, but that sort of thing was foolish, especially with a footman.
Night had long since fallen, and she was trying to read by lamplight when Swan returned. Moiraine set her book aside. She'd been staring at the same page for the past hour. This time Swan did have news, delivered while digging through her woolen dresses and shifts. For one thing, she had been approached on her way back to Moiraine's rooms by a grisly old stork, who asked if she was Suki, then told her Marian had spent almost the entire day with Prince Briss before retiring to her apartments for the night. No clue there to anything. More importantly, Swan had been able to bring up Raheen in casual conversation with Cal. The footman had not been with the Lady Inez when the boy was born, but he did know the day. One day after the Aiel began their retreat from Tar Valon. Moiraine and Swan shared a long look over that. One day after Gitara Moroso had made her foretelling of the dragon's rebirth and dropped dead from the shock of it. Dawn over the mountain, and born during the 10 days before that sudden thaw. Anyway, Swan went on, beginning to make a bundle of clothes and stockings. I led Cal to believe I'd been dismissed from your service for spilling wine on your dress, and he's offered me a bed with the Lady Inez's servants. He thinks he might be able to get me a place with his lady. She snorted with amusement, then caught Moiraine's eyes and snorted again, more roughly. It isn't his bloody bed, Moiraine. And if it was, well, he has a gentle manner and the prettiest brown eyes you've ever seen. One of these days you're going to find yourself ready to do more than dream about some man, and I hope I'm there to see it.
Do not talk nonsense, Moiraine told her. The task in front of them was too important to spare thoughts for men, in the way Swan meant, at least. Marian had spent all day with Briss, without going near Lady Inez? One of Tamra's chosen or Black Aja, that made no sense, and it went beyond credibility to believe Marian was not one or the other. She was missing something, and that worried her. What she did not know could kill her. Worse, it could kill the dragon reborn in his cradle.